Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Now we'll be talking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the second Disney Plus Marvel exclusive MCU television streaming series. Of course, I'm my co-host, Nathan from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What's up?
So, how many episodes was this again? Six episodes, okay. So, Falcon and Winter Soldier, brief synopsis, a series that follows the adventures of Falcon and Winter Soldier after Endgame, Cap is gone.
We don't know what that means.
Oh, I sort of figured out what that means. I mean, once we saw the first trailers, I think 80% of the audience pieced together roughly about 50% of what this series is going to be accurately. At least. I'll give it this. It was much better constructed than WandaVision.
I think part of the reason for that is, from what I've read, this was intended to start Phase 4. Not necessarily, like, exactly that. Like, we got WandaVision first, obviously. And that makes sense for that to start the Phase 4, because it takes place about a month after Endgame versus, Falcon Winter Soldier takes place about 6 months later. But from what I read, they were planning to start everything, and then, you know, COVID happened, so you had to play a little chess with the schedule.
They had a bunch of abandoned storylines as well. Like,
yeah, there's supposed to be like a virus or something, I read.
Like, apparently because of the sudden explosion of people, there's like a virus going around attacking anybody who came back. Nobody was adapted to it or anything like that, or ready for it.
Right. I mean, this is going to touch me to a point that I sort of kept in the back of my head ever since I saw Endgame. And Red and I talked about this briefly off air multiple times. I'm going to bring this up because I feel like this is just something that people always gloss over. And if you're making a singular movie that has a singular happy ending, it's fine, because there is no coda. There is no, well, what happens next? And you don't need that to get a satisfactory movie seeing experience. But whenever you're trying to continue the cinematic universe, you're going to have to answer these questions. And the one question I have to ask about this is undoing the blip. Or the snap, or whatever the fuck you want to call it. I personally think the snap sounds better than the blip.
The snap is when everybody left. The blip is when they came back.
Okay. But I think that ever since I saw Endgame, their goal should have been going back to stop the snap versus bringing everybody back 5 years later, because my brain was instantly going, okay, so the world has adapted to half the population being gone in 5 years. Let's just be generous and say completely adapted. By the way, I'm being generous, because I think that would have taken decades for everyone to sort of find equilibrium again. But let's say they figured out everything's food supply chains, everything's figured out. Everyone's happy. Everything's good after 5 years.
Whales in the Hudson.
But by the way, I just want to point out that's not the case in the movies, because you had fucking Scott Lang walking around San Francisco, and half the places are boarded up, look like a war zone. But let's just pretend that was just an off day. The fucking maids didn't show up that week at that part of the town. Whatever.
That's one of the things that bugged me. Like, I don't think population, like, suddenly a drop in population would change garbage men. Like,
yeah.
I lived in a small town. We had fucking garbage men. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It just
service might be backed up for a while, but eventually they're going to clear the streets.
But my point is. Even in Endgame, the message was everyone's life kind of sucks, except for Tony Stark. Tony Stark, because of his wealth, because of the fact that the person he loved didn't get snapped, was able to get his little happily ever after. He got to go into his little cabin in the woods in the middle of fucking nowhere with limitless power and a wife and a kid, and he got his happily ever after. Everyone else was fucked. And And Tony's only condition to helping them is, I get to keep my happily ever after. We're just going to bring everyone back here and now. And even my brain's going like, okay, let's say that, you know, all the farming, all the food supply was able to, like, stabilize and everyone's fine. It would have stabilized for what was, like, half that population. Like, everyone would have been fed. Fine, whatever, good, whatever. If you double the population instantly, you're going to have fucking food supply problems immediately. The logistics problem because, you know, if all of a sudden people are living in your house, where are you living now? Like the problems are like amazing. Like so many fucking logistical problems just because Tony Stark wanted to keep his happily ever after.
Well, it's not just that. It's just comic book movies. I mean, you look at after the events of Man of Steel, like Metropolis should have been shut down and evacuated, but within, I think, what, 2 years, 2-3 years, whatever, between that and BVS, they're back to work and everything's just hunky-freaking-dory.
And, like I said, with movie logic, you can kind of, like, excuse that with, okay, the end of the movie's here, we're good, there's going to be a status quo again, but it, like, is... when you have more movies tacked on to the end of that ending, there's going to be questions, and questions are going to need answers.
Sometimes you don't get answers.
And Falcon and Winter Soldier tries to answer these questions. Like they're trying to say the world is shit right now. And I'll be honest with you. I think that the whole world would be shit right now because they try to show that there's a sense of normalcy in the United States. I don't think that'd be the case. I mean, it's like Europe's a fuckhole. But America, United States is fine. They have sushi bars. You have old men going to sushi bars. You have everyone able to do their normal thing. But the second they go to Eastern Europe, it's like everything's fucked. When they go to Matterport, everything's fucked. But all the scenes in the United States, everyone's happy. Everyone's fine. It's like, no, that wouldn't happen. That would not fucking happen. Like, well, everywhere would be fucked.
Ben, when you went to Madripoor, we didn't go to High Town. We went to Low Town. And that place in the comics has always been a shithole. And they really only concentrated on, like, the camps in Eastern Europe. Because, I mean, when, you know, we get to episode 4, and spoiler alert, folks, and that happens where Walker loses his damn mind and he takes out a Flag Smasher, not necessarily the one that killed Battlestar. It's in, like, I mean, again, comic book logic. Like, obviously, it should be a lot worse than we see, but we don't see everything in the Earth post blip.
So. I know, but I just wanted to just say out loud that I think that I had even the smallest bit of feeling when I saw Endgame that Tony Stark saying we keep everything, we're just moving it forward, was selfish.
Yeah.
And I know Red actually pointed this out to me when we were talking about it, about the people that were in the planes that got blipped. And the Russo brothers actually answered this question. I'm going to tell you what the answer is, audience, just so you can hear it, because I think it's retarded. The Hulk, when he snapped, because Bruce Banner's brain is such a large, complex math brain, Bruce Banner used his complex super math abilities to make sure everyone that was snapped, that was in a plane, was safely on the ground in the right areas to make sure they didn't get hit by traffic or buses or cars or bicycles. They just wound up instantly in the safest place they could be.
That is literally the dumbest explanation for anything involving the Infinity Gauntlet I have ever fucking heard.
The Russo brothers have a lot of dumb explanations for shit, and their own writers disagree with them. Like Captain America going back in time. Well, the Russo brothers are like, oh yeah, well he had pin particles on him, so he came back from an alternate reality. Okay, then the writers are like, no, Steve has been here the whole time. The old man at the funeral, at Peggy's funeral, was actually Steve. And the reason why the Russo brothers want to fucking give you the perfect answer is because you have questions like, so Steve just stood around while 9/11 happened? He didn't say anything?
JFK gets shot, Steve didn't say anything? Like, it's his duty to protect the commander-in-chief.
It's not expressly his duty. He just it didn't like bullies. It kind of is.
Like, okay.
Okay, but he also went through the events of Infinity War and Endgame, and even Scott Lang would know that you things have to happen the way you have to have this result. If he goes back and fucks with it anymore, he may or may not unintentionally unravel the whole of reality. Like, it, he knew it sucked, and it was probably a testament to his mental wherewithal to not say anything, but he knew that these things had to happen.
Well, there's actually a great movie about that that I have to bring up. It's a really weird movie. I think Bill Paxton's in it, called The Final Countdown.
Okay, what's the final countdown?
Why are you waiting for us to respond?
Okay, The Final Countdown is a movie where a modern U.S. aircraft carrier gets thrown back into 1941 near Hawaii, like 2 hours before Pearl Harbor. And this one fucking modern supercarrier, nuclear-powered supercarrier, could literally just spank the whole Japanese fleet by itself. And you have all these U.S. servicemen just sort of, like, debating, what are we going to fucking do? Do we just sort of sit here and hide? Do we try to travel back to the future? We don't know what the fuck's going on. And the captain's like, okay, look, we swore an oath to protect our country. Didn't say when.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, if Cap was back in time and he's like, oh, Jesus Christ, John Kennedy's going to Dallas. Okay, well, I better get my shield.
But he knows with futzing with any significant, like they even say before they even go on the time heist, like, do your thing, get out, little to no footprint. Like, Cap knows he can't fuck up, but we're not going to dissect. We got to get back to the show at hand here.
Okay, but just want to bring that up. Final Countdown. Yep. 80s film, kind of good, kind of bad. Worth watching if you're interested. But back to the topic.
Well, I'm just going to use the movie's fucking excuse. You can't change time.
You just create branches.
Because your past becomes the future. The future becomes past.
Yeah.
Oh, their fucking explanation is so fucking convoluted.
I understand, like, that your future is the exact same past
situation of Back to the Future. So you can change time.
Yeah. But with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I did not expect them to answer every question we have about, you know, what the world went through with the blip and, you know, half of humanity coming back. And we do get, like you said, but we do get something of the answers, and it's the same sort of bullshit, nearsighted overreach that we could expect from our own government in this reality for shit like that. Like, you know, for, you know, we go from everyone coming back, like using Spider-Man and Aunt May, you know, they come back, like Aunt May even says, you know, she blipped back into, you know, somebody else's home because they had taken over the apartment. You know, and presumably something happened. I agree that the Marvel Universe should be incredibly more messed up like this. And I think it would have been better narratively, overall speaking, that when they resnap everything, they go back and resnap everybody like a couple minutes after Thanos does it, like they did in the comics. Because to do it like this, like, there are so many narrative plot holes now explaining, like, why isn't the world a complete shithole? But, you know, it's 6 months later. Sam's working with the military. We get my boy Batroc the Leaper back again. He's still doing his thing. I love seeing GSP come back as Batroc.
I like GSP. I'm alive. Just laughing because the version that I watched, the subtitles would not call him Batroc. They would call him GSP.
Really? Wow. But and you know, he comes back later on in, like, things like the fifth episode. You know, he wants to kill the Falcon for futzing up that deal, you know, because he lost out all in this money. And he does get shot. You see him drop. And I've had discussions slash arguments with other friends in line in regards to the ultimate fate of Batroc. I think he's alive, because generally in any show, when you kill a character or somebody gets shot and they fall down like that, and you don't see them, like the camera doesn't go on their face, and you don't see they got domed, there is at least a 50% chance they're alive. And I think they did it like that because they're going to bring him back, or possibly bring him back later on down the line.
Just also, ask the Glimmer Man.
Don't ever do that again, Ben. Seriously, we will never, we do not bring Seagal into this. Please don't. I'm just saying,
I think I should be Captain America because I'm so cool.
I really visited
Gandhi and he told me that I was a deity.
Just because also the fact that he's like, well, how can Batroc be alive? He got shot. Yeah, he got shot. He's also been a mercenary for however many years. You seriously think he's not rocking some body armor underneath that jacket?
Well, you don't see him around anywhere when they fucking fight. You do see Sharon sitting there.
Yeah, he's gone.
Just because you didn't see his get his body carted off doesn't mean he's not. I'm just saying it was done like that. I think he'll come back in a later film. One character I did not think they were going to bring in here from, like, the brief run that Sam was Captain America in the comics was Joaquin Torres. But you bring him in as this... I forget what his... Is it Army or Air Force?
He was definitely Army, not Air Force.
Okay. So you bring him as this Army officer. I don't know exactly what rank if they mentioned it. And he's got this very exuberant Jimmy Olsen kind of, you know, he's just happy to be part of the fight. He's helping Sam however he can. And they have that great bit where, what do you want to do with the wings? And Sam's like, keep them. I was like, oh, he's going to come back as Falcon in the next one. Versus the comics version where he got experimented on by Dr. Mollis, I think was the character's name, who is a mad scientist in Marvel tied to the power broker in Captain America comics. But I'd like to see him, and I like the idea that they turned the Flag Smashers from being this one singular guy with the group Ultimatum and just made the Flag Smashers be like this, you know, terroristic type organizational. They've got all the organizational capabilities of Cobra, in my opinion.
Well, Cobra actually has... go ahead, Red.
It's my theory that they're actually sponsored by Hydra. Especially with Julia Louis-Dreyfus playing Madam Hydra.
Oh, she was the Contessa. She hasn't been revealed as Madam Hydra yet.
Well, there's there's a really interesting thing about that. The Canadian guy that watches these things at half speed talks about. I forgot his name. The really bored Canadian that has nothing better to do with his life. That's what I'm going to call him. He says, well, if you slow this scene down, when she shows up, she's using an iPhone. And Apple has a rule that bad guys aren't allowed to use iPhones.
What?
Okay, I take back what I said earlier about that explanation for Captain America time traveling. That is the dumbest thing that I have heard all day.
Yeah, there's for the audience, there's some dumbass Canadian guy who slows Marvel movies down to quarter speed and watches them and says, I watched it at quarter speed and I just noticed these 10 things. And that was one of the things he listed, that she used an iPhone, so she's not a bad guy.
How do you know it's an iPhone?
Because he slowed it down. How do you
know it's not a Stark phone?
That's actually a very good point, but I'm just telling you what he said. It's
I actually just looked it up here. Torres he's actually in the Air Force, first lieutenant in the Air Force.
Those were not Air Force camos.
Okay, Ben, if you're gonna nitpick every little incongruity in the show, we're gonna be here all night.
Sorry.
I'm just saying characters in the Air Force. That's the only thing I was qualifying.
Okay. All right. I'm going to drop it. But anyways, the Contessa who knows? I actually do think she's Madame Hydra. I don't care what people say. I don't care what people say about shit like that. I totally agree with Red. She's Madame Hydra.
Like, where'd they get this app and all this fucking technology and shit? Obviously they're being sponsored.
Yeah.
And like, where'd they get the money to hire Batroc?
Batroc's expensive. Batroc's super expensive. Yeah. Like, at the beginning of Winter Soldier, the movie Winter Soldier, like, Nick Fury had to pay him a shit ton of money to hijack the boat.
Yeah. And the whole idea of them, like, obviously they're being sponsored, whether it's Hydra, and I was watching a couple of Easter egg videos. One of them was from Nerdist, where Dan Casey's the host on that, and he posited that while these aren't directly leading into some of the forthcoming Marvel series, elements from the from Falcon and Winter Soldier could be used to set up events in, like, Secret Invasion or Armor Wars, and I would say more than likely Armor Wars. That seems like the more natural series to follow up, you know, threads from here. But yeah, like, they're definitely being sponsored. It might not be Hydra. It might be Leviathan. I don't know. Are you guys familiar with that group from Marvel Comics?
It's terrible.
It's not going to be Leviathan. It's going to be Hydra. Hydra's been, like the boogeyman for so long, they're not going to throw it away.
So why can't we have a new boogeyman?
Because there's already investment in the old boogeyman. And they introduce a character who has historically been Madame Hydra. You can't be like 40 chess here. They're barely above checkers here.
Well, for the listeners who might not, Leviathan is a Soviet counterpart to S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra, which was in the great Secret Wars series written by Jonathan Hickman. I highly recommend that, where you find out that the Contessa isn't just a double agent working for Hydra. She's actually a triple agent working for Leviathan, which, if they ever do use Leviathan, I think that'd be a cool add to the mythos of the Marvel Universe, but, you know, probably not. Be cool if they did. And then we got, like, what did you think of the awe-inspiring revelation of Sharon Carter, even though everyone saw this coming a mile away, that she's actually the power broker?
Well, I'll put it this way. Part of my brain knows I should be upset, because I know what comic book Sharon Carter's story is. I know she is someone who became the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., someone who is one of the rocks in Cap's life after he defrosted, one of the people that helped him out, one of the people that was one of his greatest allies, and was someone who's a very righteous, good character. So part of me is like, I should be upset she's a bad guy. But the other part of me is like, yeah, but in the comics she was a B-lister at best, supporting character at best. I can't find myself getting enough energy to get upset about this, so I'm not upset.
How about you, Red?
They didn't do a whole lot with Sharon in the movies, so, like, she was Steve's next door neighbor spying on him, and then she kissed Steve, that's about it. Yeah. But of course Steve went back and went with Peggy. And, like, they pretty much ditched her character, so I'm like, okay, so good for her. She's the fucking
power broker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little upset by them making her the villain, but it does kind of make sense, since there are large, very broad strokes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that are lifted verbatim from Ultimate Marvel. And part of that, I think, turning her to be a straight-up villain is the almost villainous ways Ultimate Sharon Carter was portrayed in those comics. So it's not a huge stretch, as some might think, but it's a pretty big stretch. I do like the idea of how they set her up. You know, she's in Madripoor, and like I said, you know, it's the first solid length, you know, the X-Men are coming, because the Madripoor's only really been used with X-Men in the comics. We got the Princess Bar, which is the bar that Wolverine owns in Madripoor. You know, how they had her set up there also explains, like, how... You look at some other Easter egg videos, like, why did she just decide at that moment to turn the speaker on when Zemo was grilling Bucky in Civil War and how easily she seemed to adapt. You know, if she's on the run and she's in hiding, would you really be willing to start taking these guys out like one after another the way she did in the shipping containers there? Also, she, you know, where she gets in the car and she's got a driver and she's like, we're, you know, that whole thing, it was very shady from the get-go. And I thought, okay, it's, she's on the run, she's got this whole shadow network that she's been using. But again, in these clip or Easter egg videos, they say she was listed as missing, not expressly blipped in that end credit scene from Captain Marvel. So as far as the Avengers knew, she got blipped or she got snapped, but they don't know that for certain. I mean, she could have just been hiding and never had a camera take her picture for 5 years. This was the other one. And of course, we got to mention everyone's favorite villain that we love to hate, Baron Helmut Zemo, confirmed to be a Baron in this. They never mentioned that in the movies before.
Well, it makes sense if you watch the movies. Like, how did he get around? Like, how did he have the money to fucking jump from country to country? Obviously, he must have been, he must have had wealth at some point.
He also had lots of connections because he talked very flippantly about how he was able to easily get Hydra files. Like, how, like, that's, Hydra's like within SHIELD at that point, so it's not exactly like, oh, it's just a hobby. No, he had some means.
Yeah. I mean, it could also have been like he's this black ops soldier. I forget specifically what they named his group in the show, but he could have had connections like that. But yeah, he's a Baron. He's got the, you know, the whole butler, the jet and everything. He's got, you know, some good, was that champagne or whatever he was sipping on. And that whole bit where he's like, look, he gives Bucky the bug eyes. He's like, you don't like Trouble Man?
That was
like that whole exchange. I fucking love that bit.
You know, not many people caught on this, but Zemo's being a big time racist in that scene.
Well, that's what I mean.
Like,
hey, I caught on to it right away.
Yeah, it was obvious. Yeah. It's,
I've hung out with so many people like that before.
It's a trick that that racists do when they're in a room. They try to shift it on someone else to get the focus off of them. It's like really embody the African American struggle. It's like, how do you all of a sudden know so much about this? You live in Eastern Europe. You're doing something. Like every time Bucky said anything, and Bucky's not a fucking racist, but every time that he could shift it to make Sam think Bucky's racist, he did. He took every opportunity. Like when Bucky says, you look like a pimp, and he did look like a fucking pimp. Like, come on. It's like, why is any smartly dressed black man considered a pimp? Like, I see what you're doing there, Zemo.
Yeah, we could argue about that. I don't think he was getting off topic. We'll end up shouting each other.
And the other thing is, go ahead, Red.
I want to commend the actor for doing like such a wonderful fucking job at that. Like, it may have been a negative fucking thing, but he was perfect at it.
Yes, he was.
Daniel Brühl. Also, the dude's got dance moves for days.
But the other thing I want to point out about that part was the fact that Zemo is playing a educated psychopath extremely well, because part of that is not only just the racism, it's also the several traits of a psychopath is able to do really, really, you know, especially a practicing one, is able to do extremely good superficial charming, because, you know, when he's talking to Sam Malone, he's doing his best to charm the pants out of Sam, saying, oh, I've always respected Steve Rogers. I've, you know, he was a great man. And like all this stuff. It's like he's trying to get in their heads the whole time. It's
he's getting their heads, but I mean, I got the sense watching, is like, I think he actually, the character Zemo, this Zemo actually did respect Rogers, like Steve, for, you know, what he did and how he lived his life. But that doesn't also mean that he wasn't playing a game the whole time. And again, going like what Red said, it's like Daniel Brühl is a wonderful performance. What little we got, I loved every scene that I saw him in. And just like, and also before I talk about this next actor, shame on anyone that's ever bitched and complained at an act, particular actor so much that they've left social media. You have every right to not like their performance or the character they're playing. That doesn't give you the right to attack someone like Wyatt Russell as John Walker, Captain America 2.0 U.S. agent, because the guy's left all social media now because there are people out there who would like, seriously, you don't like, you know, Kelly Marie Tran as Rose Tico in the Star Wars movies. Fine. I don't see what was the point of harassing her so much that she's left all social media.
I think that's overblown and overplayed. I think she wasn't harassed off social media as much as she just chose to stop using it, and as most people should.
That's fair.
And in the quote harassment she got was, I hate to make it sound like the harassment was barely anything, but compared to what other actors get.
Like, why are we talking about fucking
Rose Tico?
Let's talk about fucking this guy who left social media.
Yeah, Wyatt Russell, because after, I think it was like the third episode, all these fans who took to, like, the horrible portrayal, blah, 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 and it's literally so much and so quick that he just left, like, Instagram and Facebook and all that. But so like I said, my piece on that, y'all should be ashamed. But his work, and again, this is the son of Snake fucking Plissken, if you didn't know, folks. Like, this is the son of Jack Burton playing Captain America 2.0. And he has he has that look for him. And I like how they didn't make him this rally-holding, uber-muscle, like, he was originally, when he first shows up, he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a U.S. flag themed costume, and he's just like this guy out there talking, trying to, you know, America, let's make America great again. In this, he's an actual soldier. He's seen combat. He knows the price of violence and all that, and he was chosen by the U.S. government to represent his country, and I think that's a hell of a lot better origin than he ever got in the comics. And it also goes to, you know, the inevitable downfall where, you know, his best friend and fighting partner Battlestar Lamar Hoskins, was it Hoskins or Hopkins? I forget.
Hoskins.
And, you know, he goes nuts as a soldier in the heat of battle just might, although I don't think a soldier in the heat of battle is going to grab a piece of metal and start hacking in the guy's head off with, but
he was going nuts before that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's, and something that Zemo said about, you know, the supremacist ideals are inherent in anybody who would want to take the super soldier serum, but he's also riding high because he took the serum like, what, 5 minutes before they went into that situation. So I liked Wyatt Russell's performance, you know, in some of the quiet moments. I think it was a lot better when he's like, do you know who I am? And he's thinks he's just getting a pass because he's Captain America. And I think my favorite scene with him was in that last episode where he tosses his DIY cosplay shield over the side and tries to haul the armored car into a more secure position so those politicians just don't pancake. He gets like 1 point of redemption for that. 1 point.
He did a good portrayal of the U.S. agent, a guy who fucking is fucking crazy, wants to be Captain America. At the same time, he has all the ideals Cap has, but he goes too fucking far. That's always been U.S. Agent.
Yeah, burn the village in order to save it.
But the other thing about U.S. Agent, I thought they did really well with Johnny Walker in the show, is the fact that they show that on paper he is the perfect Captain America, just like that echoes the scene from the first Captain America, the First Avenger, where Tommy Lee Jones' character wanted to pick the big, dumb, tough soldier because he's big, he's tough, he follows orders, and here's John Walker, you know, decorated with the Medal of Honor, all these different awards, jumped on 3 grenades. Like, on paper, this guy, you know, is able to, without the super soldier serum, able to wield the shield, throw it reflect it, balance it, grab it perfectly. On paper, he's the perfect Captain America, but he's missing that something.
Yeah. And
oh.
So you go red.
It isn't that he's missing something. It's that he has PTSD, and he hasn't dealt with it at all.
Yeah, it's
like
true.
You see Bucky dealing with it. He has a psychiatrist, a court-ordered psychiatrist, and he's struggling. He's having a really fucking hard time. Whereas John Walker, it's like, oh, you went through this massive fucking ordeal, and you seem okay. Okay, buddy, you're Captain America.
Here, throw this Fisbee around.
And there's also a line that that Walker said to Sam, because Sam, after he stopped serving, he started working with therapists. He started doing, you know, meetings and groups and PTSD treatment with veterans. Sam dealt with it by helping others deal with it. And when Sam actually is talking to John about it, John said something very disparaging about, he's like, yeah, I talked to the soldiers you talked to. Like, very disparaging, very flippant and dismissive.
Yeah. And also in terms of his PTSD and, I've seen this some videos, fan videos talking about the episode 5 where he's brought before, a Senate tribunal or something where, Senator Bad Guy, like the guy who's also part of like the Global Repatriation Council, he's like, you made me, and he lists like, I've done everything, I followed every order, and it's like a lot of scene, like hearing, some Canadian soldiers that I've had the pleasure of meeting in my life and reading about, soldiers dealing with PTSD is like, they go through all this stuff and they do like that one wrong thing and the government like just completely fucking boots them out the door and like, how dare you do that bad thing? And he's like, I was doing what you told me to do. Like, his response to that, I was like, he's not blameless in what he did, but it's not completely his fault. Like, it's a very complicated thing to talk about. When we talk about the actors, like, we got to talk about, Bucky and Falcon, like Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie. Who did you guys like more in this series for what they did?
I liked watching Bucky struggle. I think Sebastian Stan, because it just goes back to all the other things we've seen with the other previous, people who were assassins in the MCU, like Black Widow. I have read in my ledger, trying to even the book is what she said. I had, also in Avengers, you had Hawkeye asking, how many people did I, when I was under his control, how many people? And Black was like, don't do that to yourself. It's like, there's this idea of trying to balance the books, and you have Bucky also trying to balance his own book, literally balance his own book, where he has Steve's old notebook, and he's put down lists of people he owes, and he's trying to make things right by doing things the best way he knows how at first, just by trying to be, trying to, like, people he put in power, remove them from power, people who've done bad, punish them. But, the hardest part is to confess his sins to a loved one that he robbed. And there's something profound about that I liked and I enjoyed, because he's never going to get better, but he's going to get better than he was before.
Yeah. Like, that whole, I was waiting every episode to see if they were going to come back to Yuri before the finale with Bucky. And that was such a callback. Like the whole trouble he was having adjusting to living a normal life. Like, you see him, he's just blanket and a pillow on the floor. And, I thought about this and saw it in other fan videos talking about it. It's like going back to that conversation with the Steve and Sam in Winter Soldier about, it's like sleeping on a marshmallow. Like, there's callbacks like that. But that last almost entirely wordless scene, except for a few sentences where Bucky goes to confess to Yuri to, wipe that red out of his ledger, if you will. And you don't see actually how Yuri reacts other than that initial shock. And he sits down and then Bucky walking out, and you can see he's devastated, but, that had to be done. And I've seen people complain about that scene. I think it's more powerful for not hearing Yuri's reaction, not seeing his reaction, just knowing that Bucky lost this friend, but it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's the whole point, is Bucky stupidly made friends with him. He should have known better. He should have confessed. He should have told the guy and walked away. But instead, he found somebody, like somebody as old as he, almost as old as he would, somebody he could get along with, made friends with him. And he's doing the right thing and fucking giving up one of his only friends to tell him the truth. That's a good fucking thing to do.
Yes. And it hurts now because he lost a friend, but in the long run, he's going to be better because at least he has that honesty that he did that. He didn't, like, by continuing being his friend, he'll be lying to that man in his face every day.
Yeah. And also it goes to, like, throughout the series, there's that constant worry with Bucky that, you know, am I still just the Winter Soldier, even though they've, like, scrubbed my brain from the programming and all that. Like, he's worried that deep down he still is this heartless machine of an assassin. You know, it even goes before the confession to Yuri, like, with dealing with everything that Bucky and Sam have gone through, that in episode 5 where you see he had a good night's sleep for the first time in fucking years when he wakes up on Sam's couch and he sees his nephews playing with the shield, which I thought was just one of the most adorable things in the series. But you just see him, he wakes up and he's like, holy shit, I actually got rest. And then eventually going on to do the thing with Yuri. Is it just me, or did that therapist seem like she couldn't have given less of a shit?
No, she gave a shit. But the thing is,
I've never been to a therapist, so I don't know.
Well,
she gave a shit. It just, she was frustrated. That's all. That was her whole performance. Like, people watch that and they go, oh, she doesn't give a shit about him. She's just there to make money. She doesn't care. She cares. It's just Bucky refused to open up. And she was getting frustrated with him. She knew, like, there's plenty of scenes where she's like, I can tell when you're fucking lying to me.
That's the other thing that you're forgetting is, JT, is she's a soldier. She even said it herself. She was in the front line. She knows what it's like to be a soldier. She knows what it's like to not want to open up.
Okay, again, I've never been to a therapist in my life, so I have no idea what that's like. But I understand that now. It's just, you know, like the whole, what do you think was funnier? The way that initial meeting we see with her and Bucky, or in episode 2 where Bucky and Sam have that staring contest, the soul gaze moment?
A lot of people hate that moment because the way that Sam reacts to Bucky. But you got to understand, Bucky himself Sam himself is also a therapist. So Bucky's losing it and fucking yelling at Sam, pouring his fucking guts out. Sam knows better. He knows that he cannot engage Bucky on this level. It's not going to fucking help him. So he calms down the situation. He says, look, we're going to work together. We'll deal with it. We'll deal with this shield after this.
Yeah. And then also to say about Anthony Mackie's performance, honestly, as much as I loved all the action comic booky stuff with Sam, the things I love the most is that moment where, you know, after the soul gaze, like, can you at least respect my decision? The conversation he has with Carly at her friend's funeral, and as I wouldn't say it's campy, but the whole speech in the final episode, like Sam being this counselor for the world now, like Anthony Mackie put his heart and soul into that, I think.
Yeah. Honestly, in my opinion, Anthony Mackie was the weakest performance in the whole show.
I think so too.
And
I
it's think not his fault. I do not blame him in the slightest. I blame the writing, because there is a huge layer, like fucking a big, someone took a big fucking scoop of mayonnaise and just slathered it all over the fucking place of SJW bullshit.
Yeah, it's one thing that really struck me was Falcon was written as either totally cool and calm or barely simmering with rage. And there was no in between, and that was weird. Because it doesn't do well with the character, because we've seen Falcon before in other movies before this, and Falcon is cool and calm usually, but he also gets flustered. He's not totally in control, but he doesn't do rage well. Like I've never seen Falcon with rage before this show.
Well, I think it's in, was it Pain and Gain? Anthony Mackie's in that. You see him do rage in that one, but yeah, you don't see Sam, do rage very much. And, I mean, the most rage-filled thing I recall in this series, and it's one of my favorite lines because it's like a typical action movie moment, but, oh boy, you earned this ass-whooping, right before he rescues that helicopter with the GRC people. But when he says that in that moment, it's like, yeah, no, that was earned at least. What did you guys think of the way they shot Sam training in episode 5, where he's running and like the camera, they purposely leave that empty space on the left of him as he's running? I kind of like that. I see that as a callback to, On Your Left from, Winter Soldier and Endgame. Or was that a little much?
I don't remember the scene you're talking about.
I don't remember like either.
Where Sam's doing the running and the training, and he's playing, with working on the rebounding, the frisbee, and working, his acrobatics, or working acrobatics into his repertoire as he's training to become Cap, and he's doing the running and the training. You see it, the camera kind of like he's Anthony Mackie's on the right side of the screen, and you can see that there's this space on the left on the road. And, me and a lot of other fans see that as being a nod to On the Left, like that's, kind of honoring Steve in a way. I'm just saying, going back to Zemo, what was your favorite moment with Zemo in this? For me, it was that whole bit at the Sokovian Monument with him and Bucky. And you think just for a second Bucky's actually going to dome him, and he dumps the bullets out and sends him off with the Dora Milaje. That was my favorite moment with Zemo.
Zemo dancing.
How about you, Red?
Zemo did a lot of creepy shit that bugs me. Probably my favorite moment with Zemo was not because it's a good moment. It's because you guys are fucking idiots to put this guy in the same room as this guy. Is when they're talking to the guy who made the Super Soldier Serum.
Yep.
As soon as they got in the room there, I'm like, Zemo's gonna fucking kill him.
Just dome. Yeah, the one thing I'm surprised, and this goes into like the costuming with Bucky and Sam and all that, was I was actually wondering if they were gonna get the furry pimp collar part of Zemo's comic book costume here anyway, and they actually did it pretty well with that collar on the coat, and we get the mask, which a lot of people have complained. Well, why did he even have the mask if he wasn't doing that much? I was like, because we got the fucking mask, okay.
And remember he didn't have to get his member mask? I remember.
Okay, it's not a member mask. I'm sure they're going to bring... My theory is they're going to bring Zemo back in a future Marvel project, possibly in the Thunderbolts. And given that Thunderbolt Ross is pretty much the guy steering the ship for the raft, like I think they're going to make a Thunderbolt/Dark Avengers sort of thing with Zemo on the team. Not leading it, but he's definitely going to be there. But I love the fact that they actually got the mask in, and overall it looked really good. It didn't look completely ridiculous. And that goes to also to, like Bucky with the one arm, like where he rips the sleeve off of his jacket. and even Sam's Falcon suit. But I was surprised at how well they adapted Sam's Cap costume.
I hate that. It looks awful.
It only looks awful for one reason, and I've explained this to you.
Yes.
It's because Anthony Mackie has a fucked up head. His head is shaped like a fucking egg. I'm sorry. He has no chin.
His head looks like a gray alien's head. Like it's.
Yes.
But overall, because like I've seen for years, like since Sam was introduced, I've seen some fan rendering.
Are you saying ancient times Anthony Mackie show up at Easter Island?
Sure, why not? But I'm saying like there, I've seen fan renderings of the comic book Cap costume, you know, with Anthony Mackie, and I mean it turned out pretty good. Yeah, it does look kind of ridiculous. There's certainly been worse costumes in Marvel movies.
I wouldn't have put the head part on there. I would just left the goggles. Maybe put some white on the goggles.
Yeah, that whole head sock gambit thing it looks good in comics and the cartoons. Does not look good in real life.
Like I had people ask me, is he bald? He looks bald. Did he shave his head for that? No, it's just because the fucking costume makes it look like he's bald.
Also, Sam better not lose those wings. Like, those have to be constructed almost entirely out of vibranium. Because, like, that scene where he rescues the first time he does the helicopter rescue with the one cop, and Red Wing rescues the other guy, and then the copter lands on him, he holds up the shield, and the wings fold in. And it, like, that's not an easy hit to take. Like, that has to be vibranium in there. Yeah.
It's obvious that his costume is made of vibranium.
Yeah, because you have to remember that Bucky asked for a favor from Wakanda, and apparently Wakanda's like, well, if we owe you a favor, we'll construct you a brand new fucking suit out of vibranium, 24 hours or less.
It's the Wakandans. Like, what did you expect?
Then to be like, this is our most fucking precious metal ever. We grudgingly let you take enough out to make a giant frisbee.
Yeah. Also, I think was it the AO, the lead Dora Milaje that Bucky deals with. I think she and Bucky have got something going on, and it's not like a full-on physical. Like they have that, like warriors kind of respect, love for each other. And you see it in that scene where we have that flashback to where they're testing Bucky to see if they've got all of the Red Room programming out of him. Sebastian Stan's crying, and I think those were believable tears. I think, wasn't that the same episode where she does like the nerve strikes and just takes the arm right off him?
Yeah, it's the same episode.
Yeah. Were you surprised by that? I mean, I wasn't like, oh my god, but I was like, holy shit.
I was surprised that it fell off. Then I was like, okay, it's Wakanda. Of course, they would fucking do something
like that. They have that fail-safe like that. I think it was weird. I don't think it was 24 hours or less with... it was a while, because I think Sam, looking at the show, I think he's, like, running around. It has to be, like, maybe a week. I don't know. It's not necessary for me. I think it was just a bit longer than a day, Ben. What was your, besides the Falcon suit or Bucky's costume, what did you guys think of, you know, Captain America, U.S. agent, like Walker's costume?
It was a pretty damn good reinterpretation of the comic book costume. The chin strap makes Russell's head look weird.
Yeah, but I mean, that he's got a chin like his father, and they could kill with that chin.
Like his father before him.
Yeah, but yeah, no, that whole, and I mean, that's like, you know, some U.S. government, you know, design monkey is like, well, Steve Rogers had a strap on his helmet, he should put one on this one. But yeah, it almost made his head look like a mushroom, kind of. Like, when he's wearing the helmet and all that, it just looks weird. And it's also super creepy when he does, like, that 1,000-yard psycho stare and he does the little head cock to the side. Man.
And Red actually pointed out something interesting. The vials of serum.
One of them is missing. I counted them.
But oddly,
I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure Zemo has it.
But oddly, the Canadian guy that watches it at quarter speed didn't notice this.
Now, Van, I understand you don't like this man, but do you have to keep picking on my fellow countrymen like that?
Like, it could be just a mistake in filming. Could be like one of them's off camera. But I counted them as...
What was your count?
There's 19. That includes the one John Walker took and the other fucking five that...
He smashed with the watch
skills. The flag smashers have, yeah.
Well, when Curly and the soon-to-be headless horseman there recovered him, I thought it was only like they only had 8 left. And they already had like 12 super soldiers. I might have miscounted that too.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the thing that gets me is, like, you know the black case that they're all in, right?
Yeah.
And they all fall out. Well, the black case, Zemo lands right next to it when he gets hit by fucking Walker. And then the other thing is, Carly's buddy goes looking for them. You'd think he'd bring back the black case. If he's like, oh, there's nothing left. Here's the black case kind of thing. Here's proof. He doesn't.
So I
think Zemo slipped the black case into his pocket.
I don't know if the case is so much important as that, you know, potentially missing vial, which maybe Zemo took it.
The other cherry on top is immediately after Carly confirms that there's none left, it goes straight to Zemo. First thing Zemo says, would you take the serum if you could, Sam?
Yeah.
And he's like, hell no. And you believe it there. I believe that with Mackie's performance. And it's not like they're out of Super Soldier Serum because, you know, Zemo's butler blew up those four that were... I also love that bit how those last four get caught because Bucky used the messaging app that, you know, Hydra so graciously provided them. They're like, you know, this is a great app. And then they get blown up by the butler. There's still the one guy left, the one that Sam dropped in the Hudson. So potentially we still have Super Soldier Serum. I mean, all Val or Sharon have to do is get this guy transferred to a black site and just harvest him for all his blood and bodily fluids.
There's also the one person we haven't talked about, which is Isaiah Bradley.
Carl Lumley. My God, I love that performance.
When he first appears, it is a powerful fucking performance.
Like, yeah, you see him shaking like that?
Get out of my fucking house!
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying he's not in shape, but, I mean, looking at him, he looked...
He's wearing a rubber suit.
Yeah, see, that's... I couldn't tell looking at him whether that was him or if it was a muscle suit, but because you see Isaiah, and you're like, he is still vital, and that barely controlled rage, which... goes to Lumley's performance and just how he like one arms buries that cigar box in the wall. I was like, okay, let's just back away slow. Don't make any sudden movements.
Yeah, that's a permanent fixture of the wall now. It ain't coming out.
Yeah. And even that, I think the most powerful line he says in the show was, no self-respecting black man would want to be. I think that's a pretty powerful line.
Oh, to me, that fucking angered me so much. I actually screamed at the fucking screen.
It made me mad,
like,
too.
Like, you have to... Somebody has to step up. Doesn't matter if you're fucking no self-respecting, blah, blah, blah. Somebody has to be the example. And nobody does, it'll never get fucking started.
Right. And it's the one scene I hated in the last episode is... when you have Sam Wilson as Captain America, it's a great inspirational scene. It's great. Everyone's looking. And then you have that black guy say he's our Captain America. And that pissed me off. It's such a racist statement.
He never said our Captain America.
He did.
Is that the one right after the guy says Black Falcon? He says, nah, that's Captain America.
He said our.
No, he said that's.
He said that's Captain America.
I'm pretty sure I heard our Captain America.
I've watched 100%. That episode 3 times, Ben.
I'll bet you that's. $500.
All right, I'll drop it, but it's...
And also that Black Falcon thing, too, I thought was kind of a... Not a sticking point in a bad way, just like that's how the black community sees Sam, like they call him the Black Falcon, and that kid's like, no, my dad says you're called the Black Falcon. Because,
but going back to this no self-respecting man, that's just Isaiah being bitter. And that's why it angered me. It's not because somebody has to start it and all that. It's just how fucking bitter Isaiah was.
Well, bitter and broken, and he truly didn't believe that anything could be made of his sacrifice, like what happened to him, which is why I think it's because he's, like you said, he's so bitter like that. That's why I think it's a powerful thing, because he sees no light at the end of that tunnel.
And one of the things that bugged me too is you'd watch people like do the review of it, and they're like, oh, the first Captain America. He's not the first Captain America. He's the second Captain America.
Yeah, they even said Korean War. They made very clear that he was not a compatriot of Steve Rogers, like, because they made it very clear that they even had Bucky say if Steve knew he would have raised hell about it.
But the mistake comes from people who never read the comic reviewing it, like online. They're like, oh, this is they experimented on black people before Steve Rogers, and this is the story of the first Captain America. No, that's not what happens. If you read the fucking comic, it's an army experiment. They've made Captain America. They want to make a second one. They want to make a whole fucking army of Captain Americas. And it's still an awful fucking thing because they do experiment on black people first.
Yes.
That's the whole point of it.
And this, unfortunately, is actually based off a sliver of history where the U.S. Army did experiment on black soldiers by doing spinal tap experiments. It's kind of grisly. Not near as bad as...
Coercive in vaccinations.
Yes, it's not great. It's actually terrible. It's a black stain on... It is a horrible stain on the American history, and I totally agree that is something that should be taught. But at the same time, you know, if you want to talk about the first Captain America, you know, technically we have to talk about Protocide, but I don't want to talk about Protocide, so we're going to move aside from there.
You're going to move aside from Protocide?
Yeah, because Protocide sucks.
Okay, while I think that line was a very powerful one, my favorite moment with Isaiah was where Sam takes him to, you see they've opened up that, like a new part of the Smithsonian exhibit on Captain America, and you see like what, like they'll never forget, like he's being recognized as being part of this, and just that look and like that there barely visible tremble in his lips, like where Isaiah turns to Sam and he's like, he's so overcome with emotion like that. And like, that's all on Carl Lumley. Like, say what you will about his voice work as the Martian Manhunter, and I still love that, but this is probably my favorite superhero thing that Carl Lumley's done. And yes, I'm putting this over Top Mantis. As much as I love that show, it's bad.
Somebody got an Ambler alert?
Yep, I turned it off.
Yep. Okay, I've already... What's your favorite moment or scene in the show, guys?
It's hard for me because I like a lot of the silent scenes with Bucky because the actor's doing so much with so little, you know, just the minor details of the fact that he's sleeping on the floor with a pillow because he's in that state that Sam Wilson mentioned in the in Winter Soldier about, you know, your bed feels so soft, feel like you're gonna sink right on in the bottom of it. And Bucky is still in war mode, so he can't like get used to it anymore. I like all the Bucky scenes are very powerful and poignant. My favorite scene though is a weird one. I liked that scene in the locker room where he had John Walker talking with Battlestar before he goes out and does the interview. It's because it feels like, oh, he's wanted this his whole life, and he's got butterflies in his stomach. He's back at his alma mater. He's back at his high school, and he's doing this. And for as much of an asshole that John Walker is, it's a big moment for him, and you can't help but sort of feel like caught up in it with him.
You get the idea of like how he's like, oh, almost completely overwhelmed by like the enormity of what he's being asked to do. Now, how about you, Red?
I'm a sucker for emotional scenes. So my favorite scene is when Sam takes Isaiah to the Smithsonian and shows him a statue. Like, to me, that was a big two middle fingers to Sam. Like, here you go, you bitter motherfucker. Like, a lot of people were like, oh, Sam's so generous and so thoughtful. And like, to me, that was like, here, two big middle fingers. You don't want me being Captain America? Well, the world's going to fucking remember for what you do. Maybe you won't be so fucking bitter anymore.
That's fair. My favorite scene, like I mentioned it before, was that bit where in episode 5 where Bucky wakes up on the couch and you see he's had that restful sleep and the kids are playing with his shield. And you kind of follow that out into where him and Sam are having that conversation about how they're going to move forward dealing with Carly and the Flag Smashers, and where they're tossing the shield around and having some very serious conversation about, you know, I'm making amends, and Sam's like, no, you're just avenging the wrongs. Like, you're not actually doing it. Like, you have to put the work in. And, you know, that goes to him confessing to Yuri and all that. But yeah, that bit there, that's my favorite. And, you know, we haven't really talked about the character of Carly that much. Like, I wanted to like Carly so much in this show because you see what she's fighting for. You see the abuses of power by those in government over, you know, the people who are like after the blip. And how did this not happen before now? Like, you figure within like a couple of months of everyone coming back and life going to shit, somebody's going to start doing this. And I really did I empathize what they're trying to do, but how easily she's like, no, fuck them. We're just going to kill people who get in our way.
Well, when that happened, I think me and Ben were actually watching the episode at the same time. And one of the first things I said is, remember Erskine's warning.
Yes. Good becomes great. You know, bad becomes worse. Bad
becomes worse.
And maybe it's time for a weaker man, because a weaker man would understand strength.
I mean, there is that. And the as badly as I wanted to root for her, the moment where it's like, okay, you're probably going to die. I figured this right away. By the end of the episode, you're going to be dead. Where I kind of lost a lot of my empathy for her is where Erin Kellerman's the actress who played Carly, and I really did enjoy her performance, where she says, I don't want to hurt people who don't matter. And then all of a sudden you see like the head tilt and the 1,000-yard stare on Walker's like, are you telling me my best friend didn't matter? It's like, oh, you just said the wrong thing.
Are you telling me black lives don't matter?
Oh. Yeah. Well, okay, you know,
that's something else.
I heard people interpret that as that on fucking Twitter and shit.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into politics too much, but but I did like the fact that that Battlestar and John Walker did feel like they actually did have a good camaraderie. The two actors had good chemistry together. You could feel like these two were battle buddies. They both did a good job portraying that.
Yeah.
And they also, there's lots of subtlety in, like, when you had Walker, Cap, and Battlestar land on the back of the truck, there's lots of subtle things done in that scene that were really nice about the fact that this is pre-juiced Walker, and he's doing some shit that I think is, like, not technically humanly possible. Like I said, they were really keeping high with that, you know. On paper, should be Captain America, you know, but does he have the heart? No.
He has. The whole thing with U.S. Agent is he has the heart. He just always makes the wrong fucking decision. That's why you always had fucking Lamar say, oh, in the heat of battle, you make the right decision. No, you don't. That's his whole fucking problem. Like, that's the difference between him and Steve Rogers. Steve will always make the right decision, always do the right thing, even sacrifice himself if it means doing the fucking right thing.
Absolutely.
Lay down on the wire, let the other guy crawl over you.
Yeah, and oddly enough, we saw that that line has extra punch with Endgame, because it feels like Steve finally, you know, Tony finally learned to lay on the wire, but technically he did cut the wire, because this whole mess is because of his decision, which I touched on at the beginning. Is there anything else we could say? I think that the show did get too political at the end, because the last episode ended really nicely in the halfway mark, and then it's like we got 20 minutes of politics. And other than the scene of...
I think the whole series was political.
I know, but it felt overly so, and I'm not going to quote a certain other YouTuber that made a claim of, you know, 80% of the audience tuned out. No, that's fucking bullshit.
Did this YouTuber wear a real nice hat?
He wore a helmet of a sort.
Okay. I guess one thing I want to ask you guys, like, they announced pretty quickly after the show was over that they're working on making Captain America 4. Whenever that comes out, if it comes out, because who knows. What storyline do you think they might add or use as a basis for the script? My idea is, because I did read that Sam Wilson Captain America series, they do have this whole storyline about and there's a lot of moving parts, but a large part of it is all these people saying, not my Captain America. And you get all these businessmen and senators who are trying to get a leg up, you know, politically and financially by crying for, you know, Sam Wilson to return the shield. I think that's definitely going to be part of the plot. Like, and one of those comics, they have this really great scene where a dad, he's unintentionally being racist, but he's talking about, you know, the respect he had for, you know, Steve Rogers, because, you know, he fought World War II and he's fought for everything, and he's like, dad kind of definitely had his head up his ass, saying, you know, what's this guy going to do for me? And the son tries to point, well, dad, it's a different world now, things are different. And he's, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. So I think the government or some private citizen is going to, a part of the script is going to be people calling for Sam to return the shield. And I mean, they even kind of referenced that in the last episode where he says, you know, I know there's millions of people that are going to hate me every time I pick this thing up. So I definitely think that's going to be part of it.
I think that again is just a charged statement of making it impossible to criticize him, because he's putting it out there beforehand of, they're going to criticize me if I pick this thing up. It's like, what if you actually do something wrong? Like, we're not allowed to say anything because you said that beforehand. It's like, it's,
well, he's not saying that. It's just the idea that's what it feels like. Part of the next.
That's really what it feels like. The other problem is like, name the top three big comic book stories of Captain America, any Captain America.
I was asking specifically about what they could do for a storyline with Sam.
I'm trying to illustrate a point. Name three big storylines of just Captain America in the comics that you can think of, the big three ones.
Mad Bomb.
Okay.
Cap No More. You know, where Steve, granted, that's the storyline that introduced Walker, so we can't really use that. The original Secret Empire storyline where he chases the one member into the Oval Office and the guy pops himself, and we're very heavily implied, although it's never explicitly said, whether or not he was actually the president or just a politician of some import. And honestly, the only other Captain America storyline I can think of that pops to mind is the one where he has to wear power armor before he gets a blood transfusion from the Red Skull.
So, well, there's not a lot to mine here, is my point. They made some new storylines based off of the work that Brubaker did for Winter Soldier, to do Winter Soldier. They definitely touched on some of the things in that other storyline to do other things in Winter Soldier. Civil War was its own movie already, but that's more of a Cap and Tony story. Like, there's nothing really good that's left, honestly. Like, the other big Cap stories I can think of is when they introduced Falcon, and they already got to that point, so they can't really backtrack that. Like, they can do whatever they want, honestly. There's no good motive or method to it that they can mine in the past here. And when they're going off of whole cloth, who knows where they're going to go? And I have a feeling, because of the fact that they made this series so politicized and they try to do something else from there, it's going to be more polarizing than ever. And I don't think that's going to be a good thing.
Yeah. How about you, Red?
What?
Well, what do you have an idea of what you would like to see in Captain America 4, or particular comic book you might like to see adapted?
They don't really adapt comic books, though. That's the whole problem both of you are having. You're having an argument over bullshit, over nothing.
Yeah.
They name movies. They name movies after comic book series, but they don't ever copy them.
Well, so yeah, but
what's the next series maybe that I want named after?
See what happens. Well, I don't think Ben and I were arguing. You don't think there's a whole lot they can
mine
adapt properly?
Not that they can mine properly is what I'm saying. So they're going to have to do something whole cloth. I think that's my whole point, is they're going to do something whole cloth, because you mentioned the series where Falcon started as Cap and lots of stuff about people not accepting him. Like, they already touched that at the end of this series. If they're going to do more of that, like, people wanted to see this just to see what was going to happen next. If people are going to watch a series that's all about, like you're all racist, they're not going to want to tune in that every week.
Nerdy ran into that. It's called Captain Marvel. Nobody fucking likes that movie.
Exactly. So
also, he wasn't calling people racist. He just said people were going to hate him. That's
kind of what else entirely. Yeah. I think you're splitting hairs, but again, I feel like whatever they're going to do from this point is going to be more of that, unless they try to do something really wacky and strange, like The Great Director or something weird like that. Because if they try to do it, or bringing back Red Skull might be a good fucking idea at this point. But if they try to build from what they have right now, it's not going to be good.
No. I'm not going to bother making a prediction for the next Captain America movie, because I don't think I know what's going to happen. If anything, they're dealing with the Skrulls. They might end... whatchamacallit, what's his fucking face? Chris Evans has said that, yeah, he's coming back for another movie. My idea would probably be that Captain America is going to come back, but it's going to be a fucking Skrull in disguise. Like, Steve Rogers is going to come back.
Yeah,
Secret Invasion, I think you mean.
Yeah, but that might be a good...
Oh, right, the most recent Secret Empire. Yeah, forgot about that one.
But anyways, I think we sort of talked as much as we can about this. Any final thoughts and predictions, guys?
I really like the series, and unlike WandaVision, I'll probably go back and watch this again sometime in the near future. And if you guys haven't, our listeners haven't checked it out yet, I highly recommend it.
Red?
I like the series. It gets a little too fucking political, in my opinion, at some points, but if you can ignore that, it's a good fucking series.
I feel the same way, though. I liked a lot of the stuff. I think a lot of building up of, here's this great man we all knew, and you know, we don't want to step into his legacy because it feels like dishonoring it, but at the end, someone has to, or else he'll be even more tarnished. And that's a powerful message, and it touches on things about Bucky, about Sam, and how they have to move forward, and all that stuff is great. But again, the getting way too political, getting way too angry at its audience. Like, the audience can only take being yelled at for so long about how awful they are before they're just apathetic to the series. And this is definitely way better than WandaVision, but I'm not sure how much of that a praise that is. It sounds almost like it's a backhanded praise. There are my thoughts. All right, so what's the next series after this?
Loki, and that's not till June.
Okay, at least it isn't Shang-Chi. Because that looks god-awful. This your host, Ben?
JT from Saskatoon.
I think.
Say goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.